Lou Priolo, in his book, The Heart of Anger, tells us about a couple that entered his office one day named Jim and Linda. And as they sat across the desk, their eyes were filled with tears as they were frustrated because their 10-year-old son was so difficult to manage. Linda began their story this way. She says, "We can't control Joshua. He is determined to have his own way. We're embarrassed by how he talks to us. His teacher says he disrupts the whole class. She even suggests that he may need to be placed on medication to control his behavior. We've tried disciplining him, but we gave up when we got so angry that we became frightened. I feel guilty and ashamed because I failed as a mother. We don't know what to do, and I feel as if there is no hope. We're so afraid that if Joshua doesn't get help now, he's going to be a first-class rebel in just a few years." As Lou sat across his desk and listened to their story, he says that they were still wondering why the counseling center had rather unusual policy regarding the counseling of children. He said, as a rule, unless a crisis or an emergency exists, they would not see a child by himself or without having the first two or three sessions with the parents. And then he says, as he explained this reason of this policy, it said it's not to allow them to gossip or slander their son, but it's to give them the opportunity to understand what is taking place in that home. He said, in just a few moments, Jim and Linda provided some data to some specific questions that he had designed to help formulate a diagnosis of the existing problem. He said that after some time, he walked over to a whiteboard and he began to write. And here were some of the patterns that he wrote. Outbursts of anger, temper tantrums, argumentation, quarrelsome debates, disrespect, fighting, violence, animosity, cruelty, strife, antagonism, acts of vengeance, malice, bitterness, discouragement, apathy, and indifference. And then he asked them, "Can you see the common denominator in all these behaviors?" And Linda said, "Yes, it's anger. Joshua has an anger problem." Now, he goes on to say in this book that there are two types of homes. There is what is called the child-centered home or the God-centered home. He says this is what a child-centered home looks like. Interrupts adults when they are talking. Uses manipulation and rebellion to get their own way. Dictates family schedule, including mealtimes and bedtimes. Takes precedence over the needs of the spouse. Have an equal or overriding vote in all decision-making matters. Demand excessive time and attention from parents to the detriment of the other biblical responsibilities of the parent. Escape the consequences of their sinful and irresponsible behavior. Speak to parents as though they were peers. Be the dominant influence in the home. Be entertained and coddled rather than disciplined out of a bad mood. And then he says that the God-centered home is a home that joyfully serves others, cheerfully obeys parents the first time, to not interrupt parents who are speaking to each other, to understand that they will not always get their own way, to work their schedule around their parents' schedule, to have input into family decisions, but not necessarily an equal vote, to understand that God has given their parents other responsibilities in addition to meeting their needs, to suffer the natural consequences of their sinful and irresponsible behavior, to not speak to parents as though they were peers, but honor them as spiritual authorities, to esteem others as more important than themselves, to fulfill various household responsibilities, that is, chores, to protect themselves from certain bad influences, to not divide parents over disciplinary issues, to not be more intimate with either parent than the parents are with each other. Now, this morning, as we address this issue of anger, we have to find out and ask ourselves, what kind of home do we have? What kind of disposition are we possessing when it comes to this issue of anger? In fact, I formulated a couple questions for you this morning that I want us to address. And the first one is the very basic one. What is anger? Now, I think anger can be described simply this way. Anger is an emotion. It's like laughter and like sadness in terms of emotion. And really, to deny anger is also to deny emotion. It's normal and it's natural. But please understand this statement. All of us become angry, but the question is, when do we do it in the right kind of anger? Because there is a right kind and a wrong kind of anger. There is a right way and a wrong way in which we express ourselves. Now, anger, further, is a feeling of displeasure. In fact, Webster's dictionary defines it this way. It's a feeling of displeasure resulting from injury, mistreatment, opposition, and usually shows itself in a desire to fight back at the supposed cause of this feeling. A feeling of displeasure. Now, I don't know what your morning was like before you got here. Some of you maybe had an opportunity to experience this emotion. Maybe you were getting ready and you were hurrying the kids. Or maybe the kids were ready and they were hurrying you. But you had an opportunity to deal with this emotion. Before we go any further, I'd like to show you a biblical example. And it's found over in 1 Samuel chapter 25. And we see in 1 Samuel 25 a story that's taking place that involves David and his followers, a man named Nabal, and his wife Abigail. And we see in this story some very interesting attitudes that are being portrayed. First of all, beginning at verse 2, it says, "There was a man in Maon whose business was in Carmel, and the man was very rich. He had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats, and he was shearing his sheep in Carmel. The name of the man was Nabal, and the name of his wife Abigail. And she was a woman of good understanding and was beautiful in appearance, but the man was harsh and evil in his doings. He was of the house of Caleb." Now I want you to keep in mind that phrase that's mentioned there, that this man was harsh and evil in his doings. Now it says in verse 4, when David heard in the wilderness that Nabal was shearing his sheep, David sent 10 men, and David said to the young men, "Go up to Carmel, go to Nabal, and greet him in my name. And thus you shall say to him who lives in prosperity, peace be to you, peace to your house, and peace to all that you have. Now I've heard that you have shears, and your shepherds were with us, and we did not hurt them, nor was there anything missing from them all the while they were in Carmel. Ask your younger men, and they will tell you. Therefore let my young men find favor in your eyes, for we come on a feast day. Please give whatever comes to your hand to your servants and to your son David." Now the story is simply this. A rich man named Nabal, shearing his sheep. It's a feast time. David and his men watched over his shepherds as they were protecting their flocks. Nothing happened to them. Nabal didn't lose anything that he possessed. And so David said, "Listen, this is a time of feasting. You're a man of prosperity. Share a little with us. We protected you." Seems like a common request, doesn't it? Doesn't seem unreasonable. It says in verse 9, "When David's young men came, they spoke to Nabal according to these words, in the name of David. And they waited. Then Nabal answered David's servants and said..." Now notice again, verse 3 tells us that Nabal was a harsh and evil in his doings. And we'll see this in his response. Nabal responded, "Who is David? And who is the son of Jesse? There are many servants nowadays who break away each one from his master. Shall I then take my bread and my water and my meat that I have killed for my shears and give it to men who I do not know where they are from?" So David's young men turned on their heels and went back. And they came and told all these words. Then David said to his men, "Every man gird on his sword." So every man girded on his sword, and David also girded on his sword. And about 400 men went with David, and 200 stayed with the supplies. Now, question. David was wrongly treated, but was David having a proper response? How many men does it take to deal with one man? David took 400. I ask you a question. Was David mad? Was David seeking revenge? How do you feel sometimes when that happens to you? Somebody mistreats you and you get angered and you let that settle and it turns into bitterness and you say, I will get back to them. Somehow, some way, I'll get back. I remember recently my kids were listening to an Adventures in Odyssey program. Wonderful program. And in that program that was being played, there was a couple of the kids, they were at a science fair. And this one kid had worked really hard on his project. And of course, one of the bullies that's portrayed on the program, his name is Rodney Rathbone. What a name, right? Well, he comes into the room with his thugs, his groupies, and they proceeded to take over that science fair. Well, this kid here had worked about 6 weeks on putting together this model plane, and this model plane actually flew, and it would shoot pellets. Well, he had his group grab the other kid while Rodney Rathbone took the controls to that airplane and proceeded to fly it. And as he flew it around the room, he shot the pellets and destroyed all of the projects. Now you can imagine what these kids were going through. They spent all this time working on that. But when it was all over, the statement that the kid made to Rodney, he said, I'll get you for this. I'll get you if it's the last thing I do. That's anger coupled with vengeance, seeking to retaliate. In fact, the Bible tells us that when someone does something evil to you, someone lashes out at you, your response is not to turn around and say, I'll get you for that. I'll get you if that's the last thing I do. The Bible says to return good for evil. Now that is hard to do. Because you're feeling all this in your heart. You're feeling this displeasure. You're feeling this anger in your heart. Now there are several ways you could respond to this. Yes, it was wrong at what he done. But you know, I think immediately of a verse that comes to my mind found in Matthew chapter 5. It says, pray for those who persecute you. And I, you know, a lot of times, parents, when we discipline our kids, many times we discipline them when we're angry. I suggest to you that's the wrong time to do that. And you and I know it's wrong because after it's done, we walked away and said, I showed you. You might not say that, but you said it in your heart. I suggest a cooling off period. That you leave the room, you send the child to another room, and you cool off. And then you rehearse back through the disobedience. And then you take the Word of God and you seek to apply it to that situation. The Bible says, don't return evil for evil, return good for evil. The Bible tells us some other statements too on our answers, on the way that we respond. Sometimes we watch our kids and we watch them play and we see them taking on certain characteristics and we go, why are you playing like that? And if you think for just a moment, they are mimicking what they see. They're mimicking what's taking place in the home many times. And if it's not what's taking place in the home, it's what you are allowing them to be exposed to in the home via television set. And these psychologists and psychiatrists that want to come out and say that TV doesn't influence a person, they are dead wrong. Because many things influence us. You and I influence each other every time we're around each other. And I hope that we can influence each other for good. The good things, right? We don't want to have a response that David had. David's pride was hurt. He was humiliated in front of 400 people. And he said, this scoundrel, Nabal, I have vengeance on him. Now, Nabal may have been a scoundrel, evil and harsh, but he had a good wife. See, one of Nabal's shepherds who was out there with the sheep, with David's men and with David, ran back and reported to Abigail, said, listen, this is what happened. And while we were with them, we didn't lose anything. Nothing went away. We didn't have any problems. They were like a wall to us. They protected us. And he said, but what Nabal has done, evil is destined for this house. Man, if you ever want a voice of a prophet, that was the voice of a prophet. Warning of pending judgment, of pending danger. And as the story goes, Abigail prepared a feast and sent it ahead of her. And as David began to approach, she approached David in a prostrate position and crying out for mercy. Because David and his men, David pledged that night that I will go in there and I will kill every male. David had vengeance in his heart. When you read the end of the story, you find at the end of the story something that's very interesting about David's words. Now, before you get to that end, you find out that that appeased David. That took place. That helped the situation. And later on, we find out that Nabal basically has a stroke and he dies. After hearing the words of what was going to take place. And after it was all over, David said this, verse 39. When David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, "Blessed be the Lord who has pleaded the cause of my reproach from the hand of Nabal and has kept his servant from evil." Sounds like a confession, doesn't it? Doesn't that sound like that David was now admitting that his response was wrong? Hey, it doesn't matter what the status was of David, commander of an army, future king. That didn't give him any right to lash out in vengeance. But you know, we do this all the time. We deal with that attitude. We have to deal with that issue constantly in our life. And we don't think we have to. Anger, yes, is an emotion. But it's also an emotion that has to be controlled. There is a right anger and a wrong kind. I would have to say that this is a wrong kind. Let me show you another example of a wrong kind of anger. Turn with me to Genesis chapter 4. Now, we don't know a whole lot of the details about this offering that Cain had offered up to God, other than the Lord did not respect it. It says in Genesis chapter 4, verse 1, "Now Adam knew his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain, and said, 'I've acquired a man from the Lord.' Then she bore again, this time his brother Abel." Now Abel was a keeper of the sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. "And in the process of time it came to pass that Cain brought an offering of the fruit of the ground to the Lord. Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat. And the Lord respected Abel and his offering, but he did not respect Cain and his offering. And Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell. So the Lord said to Cain, 'Why are you angry, and why is your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door, and its desire is for you. But you shall rule over it.'" And then, of course, the story follows. As Cain was talking with Abel, his brother, it came to pass, verse 8, that when they were in the field, that Cain rose up against Abel, his brother, and killed him. And as we've shared from 1 John, that anger in the heart, anger that is not addressed, anger that turns into bitterness, is also anger that turns into hatred. It's also anger that is tantamount to murder. Jesus said, if you hate your brother, it's like murdering him. That's pretty strong language, isn't it? Pretty vivid. Because what is the disposition of a child of God? It's not anger, is it? It's not hatred, is it? But it's love. In fact, the type of love that, yes, is also an emotion, but it goes past the emotion. It's self-sacrificial. It's sacrificing yourself for the needs of others. It's that type of love that requires no return. And I have to say that this is the kind of love that has to exist in a marriage. There'll be times when you love and you won't get the return. But it has to be there. These families that think that marriage relationships can be successful and dynamic on a 50-50 relationship, they're just in a dream world. I think it's more like 150%. Don't you? You have to work to make it happen. And you have to work hard. But we see two illustrations here where displeasure is being expressed. In one situation, David was kept back from sinning. In the other situation, Cain committed the ultimate, and that was murder. And so we can ask that question, then how does anger manifest itself? Well, there's four ways. Four words I want to tell you in how anger manifests itself. The first one is rage. And rage is what you call bitter anger. It means to be enraged. It's a furious, uncontrolled anger. It's a violent outburst of anger where self-control is lost. Have you ever seen that happen? Where someone just flies off and there is no control. All control is gone. The second one is fury. And fury is real similar to rage. It is a violent anger. It implies a frenzied rage that borders on madness. A third one is wrath. Wrath is intense anger. Wrath quickly blazes up and it quickly subsides. The Greek word thumos, it expresses more the inward feeling when talking about wrath. It's an outburst of wrath, which may use revenge, but it's always carried out in great anger. And as Webster puts it, it implies deep indignation, expressing itself in a desire to punish or to get revenge. I think that might be the one David was using. The fourth one is indignation. Now, indignation is anger resulting from injustice or ingratitude. And it implies righteous anger aroused by what seems to be unjust, mean, or insulting. Now, a few minutes ago, I said that there is a right and a wrong kind of anger, didn't I? All four types of anger are used in the Scriptures. I believe we've already seen a couple of them in the first two stories. But let's look at some of the components that causes anger. What causes us to get angry? The first one is pride. You find that in the story with David and Nabal. David's pride had been hurt, so he lashes out in revenge. Now there's another story, it's found in 1 Samuel 18, where Saul lashes out against David. In fact, this is the first beginning sign of the troubles that David began to have with Saul. And let me read you the story. It's found in 1 Samuel 18, beginning at verse 5. It says, "So David went out wherever Saul sent him and behaved wisely. And Saul set him over the men of war, and he was accepted in the sight of all the people and also in the sight of Saul's servants. And now it happened as they were coming home, when David was returning from the slaughter of the Philistines, that the women had come out of all the cities of Israel singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tambourines, with joy, and with musical instruments. And the women sang as they danced, and they said, 'Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s.'" Now you already know what's going to take place here. What would you think? Put you in that situation. It says in the next verse, "Then Saul was very angry, and the saying displeased him, and he said, 'They have ascribed to David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed but thousands. Now what more can he have but the kingdom?' So Saul eyed David from that day forward." It was pride. You see, Saul had an ego problem. He wanted people singing his praises, yes, but he wanted to be at the top of the heap. He wanted to be at the top of the list. I ask you that simple question. Are you like that? Do you like people to sing your praises? You know, it is much better for another person to praise you than for you to praise yourself. But I have to say this, and I agree with this 100% when I hear it. Man is the only creature, you pat him on the back of the head, and his head swells. I think what we need most to help us is not pride and not things that contribute to pride, but things that will help us to be humble. Now, I'm not saying it's wrong to give someone a compliment, but I think this went a little further. And I don't think that these ladies meant anything wrong in this. But I think the issue was in Saul's heart. There was a lot of problems in Saul's heart. The second cause, and these aren't in any particular order, but it certainly is something that causes us to get angry, and that is harsh words. And I think this is one that maybe hits a little bit more to home. Because we kind of say, well, pride, you know, that's just kind of one of those spiritual things. We really don't know what that means. But harsh words, I think we do. Proverbs 15 and verse 1 gives us simple instruction. And it says, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. When you leave today, you will have the opportunity to apply that verse. I almost guarantee it. Not because I'm going to go get you angry, but you may have something happen to you today that will test your response. That will test whether you're going to respond to it and lash out in anger. And you may exchange some words. And all it's going to do is create more and more division. More and more fury. More and more rage. More and more anger. Can I suggest to you this verse? That you'd commit this to memory before you walk out this door today? A soft answer turns away wrath. Be soft in your responses. Think before you respond. Most of the time we get ourselves in the trouble we do because we don't think. We just say what's on the heart. And by the way, you can't do that. Don't say what's just on the heart. Listen, the heart is desperately wicked. So it's not going to seek to encourage that person that's mad at you. And all you're going to do is stir it up. Don't return evil for evil. Return good for evil. And one of those ways of doing that is having a soft answer. If you have harsh words, it will stir up more anger. You remember in 1 Samuel 25 and verse 3? Nabal was harsh and evil in his doings. That was his mannerism of life. That was the way he conducted himself. And as we saw in that story, he responded in a harsh and evil way. Take even, for example, the young men that shared that story that David told them to say. We find this phrase, so David's young men turned on their heels and went back. You don't think that they were angered, do you? The question is, which is the right kind of anger? The third thing that causes anger is selfishness. Not getting what you want and when you want it. Selfishness. Raise your hand if the hardest thing in your life is waiting. Am I the only one who has trouble with that? Waiting. I heard a sermon a couple weeks ago on waiting. And I really haven't thought about it like he was presenting it. Everything in our life involves waiting. You're going to leave today and you're going to go to your favorite restaurant and you're going to wait either in line or you're going to wait at a table. You're going to have somebody come and wait on you. Or maybe you'll have a child or maybe yourself has been sick and you're going to need to go to the doctor. What's the first room you're going to walk in? A waiting room. Thought, here I am, the greatest thing that I have trouble with so much, I've got to go sit here and wait. Doctors don't wait, do they? The only thing they wait for is the results. But they don't go sit in the waiting room with you, do they? Not getting what we want. You see, there's a right kind of waiting too. Waiting on God. Move in His time. Sometimes when I pray, and are you like this too? Only just a couple words seem to come out, and you don't really have much more to say. But you feel like you need to wait and listen. Or maybe you're like this. You're getting ready to make a very important decision. You find a little hesitation in your heart. You know that little hesitation is telling you? Wait. Right? Selfishness is a great cause of anger. We see that much in our children. This is mine. No, you can't play with it. This is mine. You know, we adults do the same thing. Just our toys are bigger, more sophisticated, cost more, right? And we go, it's mine. It's all mine. No, you can't play with it. Pride, harsh words, selfishness. How about unrealistic demands? This will provoke or exasperate a person to anger. If I laid on you unrealistic demands, after a while you would be provoked to anger. You know, there's a situation that's found in Genesis 30 about Rachel. Rachel was barren. She couldn't have kids. So she was ridiculed for that. And there was a time when we're told in Genesis 30 that Rachel came to Jacob and said, "Give me children or I'll die." That provoked Jacob to anger. It says, "And Jacob's anger was aroused against Rachel, and he said, 'Am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb? I have nothing to do with this, Rachel. I can't open your womb. Only God can.'" That's a provoking. Ephesians 6:4 talks about, "And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath." Don't provoke them to anger. And the word provoke means to anger. It means to suggest a repeated ongoing pattern of treatment that gradually builds up a deep-seated anger and resentment that boils over in outward hostility. Let me give you 8 ways that we can provoke our kids to anger. The first one is overprotection. We overrestrict. The second one is favoritism, favoring one child over the other. Now, of course, that's not hard to do if you only have one child, right? But you can spoil that one child, can't you? The third one is pushing achievement beyond reasonable bounds. And what this does is it causes him to see nothing that he does can please his parents. The fourth one is discouragement. That is that you never compliment him. You never encourage him in what he's doing. You're constantly discouraging him. You're constantly telling him that what you're doing is not good. The fifth one is failing to sacrifice for your children and make them feel unwanted. In other words, you make them feel like they're an intrusion. Life evolves constantly around you. The next one is failing to let children grow up at a normal pace. You know, all kids are not alike. I think if anything we've learned from homeschooling our kids for the last 6 years is that no two are alike. And they all learn differently. Another one is physical and verbal abuse. That will create a provoking to anger. And this last one is using love as a tool of reward or punishment. Giving it for reward or not giving it as punishment. If you do this, I'll do this. If you don't do this, I won't do this. That provokes to anger. Unrealistic demands. These stir up anger. Proverbs 13:5 gives us another one. It says, "A righteous man hates lying." Lying will provoke to anger. That is one of the things that provokes me to anger. I like people to be truthful with me. And when they're not truthful, that makes me angry. And then, of course, I'm tested at that point. What do I do, right? I think one thing I do is confront it. You lied. Another one is disobedience. You remember when Israel was given the manna to eat in the wilderness? Do you remember that? You remember that they were given instruction that on the Sabbath,
that they were not to eat it. There wouldn't be any more manna. So the day before, God would give them more than they needed for 2 days. And what happened was, some of the people went out on the Sabbath and began to look for the manna. That made God angry, because they were being disobedient. You know, I have to stop right here and just ask myself this question and ask you with it, include you in on my question. How does God feel of our disobedience? How does God feel when we provoke Him to anger by our disobedience? Well, if you're not a child of God, you will experience the full fury of God's anger. If you are a child of God, then God's fury of anger was put on Christ. But can I go beyond or go further and just say this, that if you experience in your life disobedience, you're constantly doing that, God will do what I call a divine spanking. Because the relationship that we have with Him is like a parent-child relationship. The Bible talks about in Hebrews chapter 12 that He scourges or He disciplines those He loves. But if you're without discipline, He says, you're not a child. You're an illegitimate child. King James terms calls you a bastard. An illegitimate child. Disobedience. And this next one is complaining. Now, Israelites also came into another city. When they came into that city, or to that place, there was no water. You can read about it in Exodus chapter 17. So what did they begin to do? Oh, that you took us out of Egypt! You know, they began to sing that Egyptian song. And it wasn't a praise song either. It was a song of complaint. It was so bad that Moses went to God and said, what am I going to do with these people? It's kind of like you just kind of want to wring their necks, you know. Because that's what complaining does, doesn't it? It drives everybody crazy. Again, that's where anger has its opportunity to express itself, doesn't it? Which is the right and which is the wrong anger? I know I keep asking that question, but it's a question we need to ask. Let me give you three more. What provokes us to anger? What causes anger? How about unfaithfulness? When Moses went up on the mountain, he began to receive the law of God. What took place? What happened with the children of Israel in Exodus 32? They had taken all the jewelry that they had gathered from the Egyptians when they were leaving Egypt. And Aaron, Moses' brother, took all of that and fashioned it into a calf. And then they began to bow down and worship that calf. And they said, this is what delivered us from Egypt. And it says in Exodus 32, verses 19 and 20, it says, so it was, as soon as he came near the camp, that he saw the calf in the dancing. So Moses' anger became hot, and he cast the tablets out of his hands and broke them at the foot of the mountain. Then he took the calf which they had made, burned it in the fire, ground it in the powder, and he scattered it on the water, and he made the children of Israel drink it. You say, I think we got the answer to our question. That was the right kind of anger. That was anger against sin, wasn't it? Do you get angry at sin? Do you get angry at sin in your life? The life of your family members? The life of your friends? The life of your brothers and sisters? Are you angered at the point that you're willing to go to that brother or sister and say, listen, the life that you're living and what you're doing is sin? Are you willing to do that? If we're not willing to do that, then God will move His hand of mercy away from us. His hand of grace. Because we are becoming those who favor sin. Unfaithfulness causes anger. Pain to a loved one causes anger. Genesis 39 and verse 19, you remember when Joseph was accused of raping his master's wife. It says, "So it was when his master heard these words which his wife had spoke to him, saying, 'Your servant did to me after this manner,' that his anger was aroused." It seems like it would use stronger language than that. Don't you think? "I'm jealous for my family. You hurt my family, you hurt me." You feel the same way, don't you? I think that's one of the things that God puts in men to protect their family. Protect them from harm. Protect them from people trying to hurt them. We all know the story about that little girl being kidnapped in Gainesville. Could you imagine the pain that she was feeling? That her child, not knowing what was taking place. You've rehearsed those thoughts in your mind. I know we do. Think about that all the time. That's why a lot of times when we're at places, we don't let the kids just wander off. You know what I mean? Pain to a loved one, that will cause anger. This last one is injustice. In Genesis 44 and verse 18, it says, "Judah came near to Joseph." This is after Joseph had revealed who he was. You remember the whole story. Sum it up in a few chapters just by saying that Joseph's brothers hated him. They sold him as a slave into Egypt. While he was in Egypt, he came to live with Potiphar and took care of his household. We just read about the verse where he was accused of something he didn't do. He was thrown in jail. He was left in jail for a couple years. He interpreted two dreams, one of a baker and one of another man who held the cup for the king. The person who had the cup for the king was able to be released. Joseph told him, "Remember me." 2 years went by, he didn't remember him. But then it came a point where Pharaoh had a dream that needed interpretation. And then he remembered him. And Joseph interpreted the dreams. There were going to be 7 years of famine, 7 years of plenty. And Joseph's advice was, appoint someone that would gather in during the time of plenty. And Pharaoh chose him. So there came a time when his brothers had to come to Egypt because the famine was everywhere. But after it was revealed that Joseph was who he was, their brother, Judah came near to him and said, "Oh my Lord, please, let your servant speak a word in my Lord's hearing, and do not let your anger burn against your servant, for you are even like Pharaoh." And you read in the rest of the story, you find out that Joseph didn't have that attitude. He said, "You might have meant it for evil, but God meant it for good, to preserve life." You see, I think one of the issues is how do we perceive what's going on in our life? Do we just see it in the physical, but do we consider it in the spiritual? What is God doing? And instead, God is seeking to draw you to Himself and test your faith, and we find ourselves getting angry and upset and not cooperating with the process, and we make matters worse. You know what we find out? It says in James, "Let patience have its perfect work." What happens when you don't let it have its perfect work? You're subject to go through it again. You're subject to go through it as many times as it takes for you to learn. How many times do you want to go through it? I don't want to go through it at all, and neither do you. But since I have to go through it, I only want to go through it one time. Don't you? I want to learn. And I want to take what I learned and I want to give that to someone else when they're going through it. I'd like to close with this statement. It says, it's wise to remember that anger is just one letter short of danger. Which is the right kind of anger? Well, you come back next week and we'll talk about that. Because in Ephesians chapter 4, in fact, you can go home today and read this passage. In Ephesians 4, verses 26 and 27. And that will give you your answer. But we're going to talk about it in more detail next week. Let's pray together.